Hey there, Weber podcast listeners. I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition, and I wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited to make it a little bit shorter and a little bit sweeter so you only have the good stuff. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Connor Cyrus. Starting Friday, Bookstock is back. It's a chance to celebrate Vermont and New England authors, poets, and artists at the Woodstock Green. One of the authors who will be there is Donna Gordon, whose debut novel, What Benjamin Franklin Would Have Told Me, just hit bookstores. It's a story that walks us through the importance of time and life through the lens of two people with big stories. They meet as caregiver and caretaker, not liking each other, but knowing one is dying of a rare disease and the other survived war. They realize they have a lot in common and learn to be friends as they explore two major cities looking for answers. The author of the book is Donna Gordon, and she joins me now. Donna, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you so much, Connor. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for your interest in my novel.
Absolutely. So I want to give our listeners a chance to get to know you and your relationship to Vermont. So I was wondering if we can just start this by you explaining who you are as an author and what your relationship is to the Green Mountain State.
Sure. I actually live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but I'm a big fan of Vermont. My book is called What Ben Franklin Would Have Told Me, and the Vermont Standard already has done a feature about me in the book, and so I think it'll be a good connection. I also love Vermont for another reason. I've twice been a fellow at the Vermont Studio Center in Johnson, Vermont, which is close to Stowe, and I've done a writing residency there twice, which was a great opportunity to be in Vermont. I was there in the fall and in the winter of 2017 and 2018, and they gave me a studio and all my meals and housing, and it was a great opportunity to work and to meet people. So I look forward to driving to Vermont this weekend and being there.
Now, I think a lot of people have really good story ideas, but there's always something that stops them from putting the pen to paper and turning their stories into novels. What inspired you to finally put this story and put pen to paper for this particular story?
This took me by surprise, actually. I've written a lot of short stories and poetry, but this particular story came into being coincidentally. I had two sort of profound experiences. I had volunteered at a camp in Sebago, Maine for kids who, it was called Camp Sunshine, for kids who had life-threatening illnesses and their families. So the whole family came for a week. So one boy I met at the camp had progeria. I had never seen progeria before. He was probably 12, but he had the appearance of an 80 plus individual. His body with progeria, which affects about 1 in 4 million children, the body ages at an accelerated rate, and children often don't live past 15 or so. So I met him. And then about the same time, I had done a project with Amnesty International for which I had photographed and interviewed 15 people on their speakers list. And the people I met had all been political prisoners. They were from all over the world. And I met two people who had been among the survivors of the Dirty War in Argentina. And the Dirty War took place between 1976 and 1983 under the dictatorship of Jorge Videla. And about 30,000 people at the time had been among the disappeared, people who had been accused of so-called crimes against the government. So there were student activists and journalists and just ordinary people who were suspect. And like I said, two of the people I met had survived that imprisonment and torture. So those two events took place about the same time in my life. And as a writer, it was unsettling to have experienced both of those events and people. So I didn't purposely plan to connect them. But as I thought about it, I knew I was struggling with ideas of time. It was sort of accelerated time for Lee, who is my character who has progeria and is 13, and then lost time for Tomas, who is my character who was a former journalist and survivor of the Dirty War in Argentina.
I want to ask, how did you end up in your mind putting these characters together? Because I think a lot of people would see these as two isolated events that happen and each worth their own story. But in your book, these two are actually Tomas is a caretaker of Lee, and through their journey, they learn so much about life and time and death and mortality. So what was it that made it click that these two characters need to meet?
That's a good question. I think I felt that each of them, both of them, had a profound need for connection. They were struggling. They were survivors. They didn't know what was next in life. And the way I have it set up in the book, Tomas comes onto the scene as Lee's caretaker because the previous caretaker can't do the job anymore. So in a sense, I have it set up in the opening chapter that they're each taking a chance on one another and they're suspicious of one another and they don't particularly like one another. But there is that underlying profound emotion, that sort of reaching out that they can't help but experience, and they don't see it coming in one another, but they do. And so as a writer, I put them together in a room, and it started with the antagonism towards one another, and then gradually they found things in common. So people have asked me, you know, how can you put two people together with such dark stories? But their stories never seemed dark to me. They always seemed like there was something that was going to happen that would be positive once they made the connection with one another.
I mean, but so much of life, I feel, is individuals coming together and connecting or bonding over trauma or dark stories. So in a lot of ways, this are just like two regular people, because again, everybody has a story. So I find that just really interesting of finding these two particular characters and putting them together and having them learn from each other, kind of both on opposite ends of life.
Yeah. Yeah, but each of them had a history, and that history plays out as they spend more time together. So I think that's part of what propelled me, like knowing that the history was going to come out.
Now, the book takes place during the Ronald Reagan presidency. Why was that an important time frame for you to have this story take place?
Because I have a character who's Tomas, who's a survivor of the dirty war in Argentina. I needed to set it during that time. The dirty war took place between 1976 and 1983. And so I needed to move my story back in time. There were a lot of things I already knew from my interviews with survivors, but there were a lot of facts I didn't know. There wasn't nearly as much known about progeria back then as there is today. Today, there's a progeria research institute at Brown, where I happen to have been an undergraduate. But I had to learn. I had to become a good researcher. I went to DC and Philadelphia to see things firsthand that I needed to understand. And then I did a lot of research on the internet. I learned that the font for the Washington Post is something called Engraver's Old English. I needed help translating from English to Spanish and Spanish to English, and a lot of details about things in the world, like the altitude of a plane from Newark, New Jersey to Washington, D.C. And, you know, a world started to build as I did the research and learned about the history. And the other thing is that Lee is an American history buff and a Ben Franklin fan. So I needed to learn about a lot of the artifacts and history involved with that as well.
How much of a history buff are you naturally in your regular life?
Not as much as Lee, but I took on a lot. I learned a lot. I educated myself, I think, in some surprising ways. I didn't know that the Liberty Bell sounded terrible, but I learned about that. And I think it was an E flat, but I have to double check that. But I am sort of a person who enjoys learning the facts and the structures and the strategies about things. So I'm probably most likely in my real life.
Now, your novel is What Benjamin Franklin Would Have Told Me. And it, like we've been talking, it focuses on the relationship between Lee and Tomas. And one of the big themes that I take away from it is the sense of mortality. Why was it important to talk about mortality and maybe not such a grim way, but just as reflection.
Well, the facts of Lee's life were sad. There was nothing he could do about it. He knew he was going to die. His mother knew he was going to die. His best friend, Kira, has just died. But even though it's a dark thought, it was more his life in the present that I was involved with. I sort of knew early on what his fate was going to be, but his character and his vitality and his curiosity and smarts and open-mindedness in so many ways were really where I involved myself. I mean, I was most involved in the building of the character, and Tomas had sort of defied mortality. He lived beyond a situation where he should not have lived. And women at that time, he's searching for his missing wife and child who may or may not be alive. Women at that time during the Dirty War, if they were pregnant, they gave birth in prison. The babies were taken and adopted by the military higher ups, and the women, the mothers, were loaded into a plane and thrown out into the ocean over Uruguay. So there were a lot of things going on that were horrific, that were hard to believe and hard to absorb. But my characters were very much in the present, even though they look back in some ways, and it was hard for them to look forward. But I was just totally involved in their moment in the present, which is what helped me write the book.
I know I asked you to pick out two excerpts from your book that are important to you or meaningful to you. So I was wondering if you would read one of those now.
Sure. I'll start with, if I might, with one of the epigrams by Diane Arbus. And it goes like this. There's a quality of legend about freaks, like a person in a fairy tale who stops you and demands that you answer a riddle. Most people go through life dreading they'll have a traumatic experience. Freaks were born with their trauma. They've already passed their test in life. They're aristocrats. So now I'll just read a little bit from the beginning.
Before you go to that, I want to ask why you chose to, for our listening audience who haven't met these characters yet, why was that important for you to kind of set the tone for your book?
So Lee is a frightening character to look upon. He's bald. He's got sort of a beaked nose. He looks ancient, but he's not very tall. He's small, and he's sort of difficult to understand. He looks like a freak in a way. Diane Arbus had liked to photograph freaks and people who were outside the norm. And in some ways, Lee falls into that character, as does Tomas. Tomas more on the inside than from his outward appearance.
All right, let's hear that first excerpt.
This is from What Ben Franklin Would Have Told Me. Lee knew for a fact that his obituary was already written by the reporter who interviewed President Ronald Reagan last fall, shortly after his election. He hoped the headline would be dignified. Lee Foster Adams, conqueror, explorer, detective, dies at 13 from rare illness. Sometimes he forgot that he looked like a 102-year-old trapped in a kid's body, but then he would catch a glimpse of his reflection, or worse, see how his appearance frightened others. Bony beyond belief, he looked like an outer limits alien, his profile as old and cracked as the dead presidents on Mount Rushmore, insides as decrepit as Night of the Living Dead. That's what Hutchinson-Gilford progeria syndrome did. Decayed you from the moment you were born, causing the cells in your body to age at a super accelerated rate, about the same as a cat, but half as quickly as a zebra, and not nearly as fast as a fruit fly or mouse. He was 3'8" and weighed 35 pounds. He had false teeth, heart disease, arthritis, a defibrillator, and was as bald as the bird on the back of a dollar bill. He was forbidden to chew gum. Dr. Bream at Children's said he chewed it anyway because he liked to tempt fate and was already living on borrowed time. Dr. Bream said the whole thing, meaning his condition, came about on account of his father's faulty Y chromosome. You can pinpoint things like that in the lab. In the whole history of modern times, there'd been only about 100 freaks like him, with an average life expectancy of 12. Going on 13, he was an anomaly, like the 50-foot woman, or Jesus Christ, or Frankenstein. Lee's favorite thing to eat was strawberries, and his favorite book was Shane. He liked Westerns, but his favorite character of all time was James Bond. If he had to live his life over, he'd be a spy with a capital S, but work for America, not Britain. His favorite gadgets were the spy pen with the ammunition inside and the shoe phone that Agent 86 had hidden in his heel on Get Smart. Patrick was Lee's pet Vietnamese pot-bellied pig. Lee and his mother, Cass, adopted him from little orphan Hammies when Lee was 5. Patrick was distinctive in his pink and white coloring, well-defined snout, and split hooves that made his hip-wide stance both princely and humble. Most people didn't realize what good pets pigs make, how they are smart and clean, and look almost identical to humans in the embryonic stage. Then the porcine features kick in at about the 4th month, the tail and snout and bacon in between.
A lot happening there, but you do such a great job of describing Lee's condition and how he looks. What do the characters themselves, what are they learning? What's the character's biggest lesson that they learn in the book?
I think they learn not to underestimate one another and not to underestimate themselves. I think they learn that they're stronger together at times and sometimes stronger apart. It, in a way, you could say it's a love story. They become sort of like father and son over time. And Lee's new job to help Tomas find his missing family gives Lee a purpose in life and a meaning that he never thought he could have. And he feels vital to the journey and vital to the discovery. In some ways, he's stronger than Tomas, which surprises both of them. And then Tomas finds that he has a tender part he had forgotten or maybe never had a chance to express when he learns to care for Lee and to support him and to understand his disease. At first, Tomas just sees his job as a caretaker with Lee as a job, and he's pretty dispassionate and sort of fatalistic. But over time, he roots for him, and they become stronger together. So I think that's what happens.
Now, Donna, the title of your book is What Benjamin Franklin Would Have Told Me. But the question is that I have, and I think maybe the listeners too, how does Benjamin Franklin play into all of this?
Okay, so Benjamin Franklin is sort of, in darker moments, sort of Lee's reason for being. When Lee's, you know, he's a historian. He's got a great sense of humor. He's precocious. And as he studies American history, Ben Franklin becomes his hero because Ben has survived many things. He's been an inventor. When the calendar changed from the English to the Gregorian, he was born twice because his birthday changed. And so he had two different birthdays at one point. But more importantly, Lee looks to his idea of Ben Franklin as a way to help him through hard times. And so when he doesn't know what to do in a given situation, he'll say to himself, what would Ben Franklin have done? What would Ben Franklin have told me? And he'll be able to sort of search within himself while searching through the idea of Ben Franklin being a friend to him. And that helps him figure out how to react to things and what to do. So he's sort of the friend that Lee could never have, but he's powerful in his presence. As mother to all the characters, I still live with them, and it was hard to let them go.
That's Donna Gordon, author of the new book, What Benjamin Franklin Would Have Told Me. She'll be at the Bookstock this Saturday signing books and talking to people. Donna, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Connor. It was great to be here.